So picture this. You have exactly two bullets left in your chamber.
Oh man, the absolute worst feeling.
Right. Your character's hands are shaking so violently you can barely even aim your revolver. And the wet, rotting Victorian stonework around you feels like it's, literally shifting in the
It's
shadows.
just a constant state of panic.
Exactly. Welcome to this deep dive, everyone, because back in 2019, The Sinking City was a game where you could basically just turn around and walk away from danger if things got too
Yeah,
intense.
you could just jog down the street.
But 7 years later, its sequel has locked the doors, flooded the streets, and just completely swallowed the key. We are stepping into 1920s Arkham, Massachusetts.
But definitely not the historical town.
No, not at all. It is this submerged, fog-shrouded graveyard that is completely infested with cosmic abominations and like fanatical occultists.
I think the most brilliant part of this design is that there are no lore barriers here.
Right, no required reading from the first game. You are just an investigator searching for lost kin, stepping blindly into a standalone nightmare.
Which is such a smart move for getting new players on board.
For sure. So our mission today, we are tearing into a massive stack of developer telemetry, verified hardware benchmarks, and a highly detailed critical consensus.
Anchored by that really extensive technical review from Tekken Game, right?
Yep, the one dated August 19th, 2026, covering The Sinking City 2. We're going to explore this truly fascinating case study in modern game design.
It really is a fascinating case.
We're examining how this independent Ukrainian developer, Frogwares, achieved a breakthrough not by, adding more content, but by ruthlessly amputating the most marketable features of their own franchise.
It is a remarkable pivot. I
Love
mean,
you.
frankly, it's a masterclass in design by subtraction.
Yeah.
They didn't just iterate on their previous formula, they fundamentally deconstructed their own work. They took this sprawling, somewhat traditional open-world detective game and just compressed it.
Shrunk it right down.
Exactly, down into a terrifying, incredibly claustrophobic survival horror experience.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the numbers alone tell a highly unusual story for the modern gaming industry.
Oh, the review scores are wild.
Right. The original game in 2019 had a decidedly mixed critical reception. It sat at a 71 Metascore, largely because its ambitions kind of outpaced its execution.
Yeah, they bit off more than they could chew.
But the sequel, it has jumped to a strong 79 consensus, and Tekken Game actually awarded it a very impressive 8.5 out of 10.
Which is huge for an indie studio in this genre.
It really is. So to understand why the sequel is making such waves, we really need to look at what the developers deliberately chose to strip away from the foundation.
Right, well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of where gaming was in the late 2010s, the original 2019 title was, frankly, a victim of the open world craze.
Everyone had to have an open world back then.
Exactly. It had this vast, sprawling city grid. You could go anywhere, but honestly, it felt pretty procedurally hollow.
Yeah, lots of empty space.
And you had abundant ammunition, the gunplay was generally considered floaty and weak, and the threat level was surprisingly shallow for a horror game.
Which kind of defeats the purpose of horror.
It does. You spent a massive percentage of your playtime just navigating these really verbose dialogue trees and jogging from point A to point B.
Okay, I have to stop you there. Because we are in an era where massive, 100-hour open worlds basically print money,
Oh, absolutely.
players constantly measure a game's value by its map size. So scaling the world down sounds like, developer suicide. How did Frogwares justify pitching the removal of the most marketable feature of modern gaming?
Well, because they realize that in horror, space is the enemy of tension.
Space is the enemy of tension. I like that.
Think about the psychology of an open world. Your instinct as a player is to move through the space to get to the next objective marker. The environment is just a backdrop. It's a commute.
You're just trying to get it over with.
Right. If you encounter a monster in a sprawling open world, you can usually just run away.
Yeah.
You can kite enemies in circles or find a vehicle or just, jump over a fence.
Yeah, the threat is totally localized.
Exactly. By abandoning the open world grid entirely, Frogwares forced a psychological shift known in level design as cognitive mapping.
So instead of a massive repetitive grid, the game is now structured around dense, interconnected, semi-open hubs.
Yeah, what the industry calls Metroidvania design.
Right. It's like switching from an open world to a Metroidvania hub is like moving a rat from an open field into a maze.
That's a great analogy.
But in the field, the rat's survival strategy is just run away in any direction. But in the maze, the walls dictate the rat's behavior. The environment itself becomes the primary antagonist.
That is the precise psychological shift they engineered. You are no longer commuting through Arkham. You are trapped in it.
You're locked in with the horror.
Exactly. And that changes the narrative delivery completely.
Right.
Because the world is denser, they gutted those endless verbose dialogue menus.
Goodness.
Instead, you are piecing the story together through environmental storytelling. Hmm. You're deciphering cryptic journals you find in the rubble and dealing with the actual consequences of branching narrative moral choices.
So you're watching your protagonist's mind unravel in real time rather than just like reading about it in a text box.
Exactly. It's active rather than passive.
And because that maze is now tighter and much more dangerous, the way you actually interact with it specifically through combat and survival had to become drastically heavier and more consequential.
It couldn't just be the floaty shooting from the first game.
Right. The mechanics of this game aren't just tweaked. They are fundamentally punishing. We are talking about visceral, heavily weighted combat.
Oh, the combat is brutal now.
When you fire a vintage 1920s .38 police revolver or a rusted double-barrel shotgun or even a lever-action rifle, there is this profound physical weight and recoil.
Yeah, you can practically feel the mechanical delay of the hammer dropping.
It is the absolute antithesis of an arcade shooter.
And there's a brilliant quote from Alexander Radko. He's the lead gameplay designer at Frogwares that perfectly captures their intent.
Oh, what did he say?
He stated, "We wanted players to experience genuine vulnerability in the face of cosmic dread. Every single bullet must feel as precious as life itself in the ruins of Arkham."
Every single bullet must feel as precious as life itself. I mean, that isn't just marketing copy either.
Not at all.
Resource scarcity is the central nervous system of this game. Ammunition isn't something you just casually stockpile.
Yeah, a missed shot isn't just a slight waste of resources. It creates a cascading failure that can easily become a death sentence.
And you're managing all of this within a strict grid-based inventory system. You're constantly forced to make agonizing trade-offs.
Do you carry an extra box of shotgun shells? Or do you leave that space open for medical supplies you might desperately need in the next room?
Exactly. And you are actively crafting your means of survival on the fly under extreme pressure.
You aren't stumbling upon magical health potions and ancient ruins here.
No, you're scavenging mundane items, like industrial alcohol and scraps of cloth to craft Molotov cocktails.
Right, and you need those to strategically funnel these grotesque oceanic mutations into flooded bottlenecks.
It's about crowd control as much as actual damage.
Yeah, or if your strategy fails and things go completely wrong, you are forced to resort to brutal melee combat with a heavy fireman's axe.
See, here's where it gets really interesting, because swinging that heavy fire axe is a high-risk gamble.
A massive gamble.
It drains your stamina incredibly fast. It leaves you completely winded and unable to sprint away if you miss. It is truly a desperate last resort.
And layering over all of this physical vulnerability is the sanity meter.
Oh, the sanity meter.
If you spend too much time navigating pitch-black areas, or if you accidentally witness eldritch rituals, or even if you just try to decipher the occult tomes, you find your mental stability actively degrades.
Which raises an important question about how games communicate failure, because the sanity degradation isn't just like a blue bar on the screen slowly emptying.
No, it triggers aggressive, intrusive, visual, and auditory hallucinations.
But more importantly, it physically impacts your mechanics. Yeah. Your weapon aim becomes wildly erratic. Your crosshairs actually drift.
And the only way to cure this condition is to craft sedative sanity serums out of herbal extract and laudanum.
Okay, I have to push back here. Look at this combination of mechanics.
Sure.
Ammunition is exceedingly scarce. My aim is jumping all over the screen because my character is literally losing their mind. And swinging my emergency axe drains all my stamina instantly.
It sounds rough on paper.
It really does. How does this avoid crossing the line from a tense horror experience into just being endlessly, infuriatingly frustrating for the player?
It's a very fine line to walk, I agree. But this is where understanding the core philosophy of Lovecraftian cosmic horror is essential.
Okay, how so?
Well, the entire subgenre is built on the concept of existential insignificance. You are not a superhero. You are not a highly trained space marine.
You're just a guy in a suit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You are an incredibly fragile human being facing unfathomable ancient gods and their aquatic creations. The mechanics are meticulously designed to make you feel that exact fragility.
So it transforms a standard enemy encounter from a mindless action sequence into a strategic, heart-pounding puzzle.
Yes. You aren't just shooting, you are calculating risk. Do I use the laudanum now to steady my aim, or save it for the boss fight?
Do I use the Molotov to block this doorway or take the stamina hit with the axe?
Right, it's about scraping through by the skin of your teeth, which triggers that massive adrenaline release when you finally survive a room.
But knowing you only have 3 bullets doesn't cause panic in a well-lit, predictable room. That scarcity only works if the environment actively lies to you and hides the
This
threats.
is exactly what they do.
Right, how is Frogwares using the engine to weaponize the shadows against the player? Tekken Games' review goes deep into how The Sinking City 2 is an absolute masterclass in Unreal Engine 5 execution by an indie studio.
Oh, the visual rendering pipeline they've utilized is genuinely state-of-the-art.
Yeah.
We know Unreal Engine 5's Lumen handles real-time dynamic global illumination. But what's fascinating here is how Frogwares isn't just using it to make the puddles look pretty.
They're actually weaponizing it.
Exactly.
But
They are actively weaponizing Lumen to manipulate the player's sensory processing.
let's explore exactly how that works in practice.
Yeah.
So imagine you are standing in a flooded alleyway with a flickering street lantern.
Okay, setting the scene.
Lumen calculates how that specific erratic light bounces off the wet, reflective cobblestones. It calculates how it mixes with the ambient moonlight and how it refracts through the murky floodwaters all around you.
And because the light behaves exactly as it would in physics, it creates false positives.
Yes. You see a shadow stretch across a brick wall, and your brain instinctively registers it as a threat.
So you end up wasting precious sanity serums, bracing for an attack from an enemy that doesn't even exist.
Yep.
Simply because the lighting engine is so realistic, it tricks your peripheral vision.
It's like Lumen is the lighting director in a horror film. It's an active participant in your psychological breakdown.
And paired with that, we have Nanite virtualized geometry.
Right, the other big UE5 feature.
This technology allows the game to render millions of micropolygons on screen simultaneously without the frame rate tanking. We are talking about hyper-detailed architectural decay.
Like when you walk up to a rotting Victorian facade, you can see the individual splinters of wood buckling under the water pressure.
You can see the moss physically creeping over the cobblestones. When an oceanic mutation attacks you, you can see the grotesque, leathery texture of its skin.
It's incredible because they back up that immense visual fidelity with serious performance optimization across the board.
Which is so rare these days.
Very true. On the PS5 and Xbox Series X, players have access to dual modes: a quality mode rendering at a dynamic 4K resolution at 30 frames per second, and a performance mode targeting a smooth 60 frames per second.
And for PC players, the game boasts native support for the latest AI upscaling tech. We're talking DLSS4 and AMD's FSR 3.1.
And perhaps most crucially for maintaining that suffocating atmosphere, the SSD load times are incredibly rapid. They average under 4 seconds between major city districts.
See, those load times are a psychological pacing tool.
How so?
In older horror games, a minute-long loading screen behind a door gave the player a moment to breathe, to check their phone, to let their heart rate drop.
Oh, right! A built-in safety zone.
Exactly. By virtually eliminating loading screens, The Sinking City 2 removes those relief breaks. The tension is just this continuous, unbroken thread.
And we absolutely cannot discuss a horror game without diving into the audio design.
Oh, the audio is phenomenal.
They are utilizing advanced 3D spatial acoustics supporting Dolby Atmos and PlayStation Tempest 3D. Plus, there is full DualSense haptic feedback on the PS5.
The controller actually simulates the physical, sluggish resistance of your character wading through thigh-high water.
That's wild, and it perfectly mimics the heavy mechanical tension of pulling the trigger on those vintage rusted firearms.
What stands out in the telemetry is how the technology directly serves the survival gameplay loop.
Right.
The fluid dynamics of the water and the thick volumetric fog aren't just graphical buzzwords used to sell copies. They directly dictate your tactical approach.
So when you are navigating a small, fragile motorized boat through these completely submerged city districts, that heavy fog and the dynamic water ripples are actively masking enemy approaches.
The technology is quite literally amplifying your fear of the unknown.
You hear a splash, but the volumetric fog diffuses the light so perfectly you can't tell if the threat is 5 feet away or 50.
It's terrifying.
Now, to maintain our complete impartiality here, we have to acknowledge that the Tekken Game Review did point out a few technological flaws. It is not a completely flawless piece of software.
Right, nothing is perfect.
They noted some occasional frame pacing dips, specifically on mid-range PC graphics cards, during sequences that feature extremely heavy water reflection and chaotic combat simultaneously.
Which makes sense. That's a lot to render.
And they also mentioned that some of the secondary facial animations during the dialogue scenes could use a bit more polish. They can occasionally look a bit stiff compared to the stunning environments.
But zooming out, this still sounds like a staggering technical achievement for a studio of this size.
It absolutely is. They focused their resources exactly where they mattered most, the atmosphere and the mechanics of survival.
Yeah, they really nailed their priorities.
So let's put you, the listener, right in the thick of it. You have the heavy, punishing combat mechanics. You have an Unreal Engine 5 environment that is actively playing tricks on your eyes and hiding monsters in volumetric fog.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It
Yeah.
is. So how do you actually survive this? Let's talk about navigating Arkham, the level design, and the vital survival tactics taken game synthesized from their developer data.
Well, as we established, the level design relies heavily on Metroidvania mapping.
Right.
You are not just walking down a linear hallway. You are exploring decrepit aristocratic estates, sprawling abandoned sanatoriums, and horrifying multi-leveled flooded sewer labyrinths.
And progress is frequently gated by intricate, multi-tiered puzzles. You have to actively read the environment and actually understand Lovecraftian astronomy and Eldritch lore just to unlock doors or access new areas.
And here is the kicker, the design choice that truly separates this from the mainstream. There are absolutely no intrusive HUD waypoints.
None. There is no glowing golden arrow on the ground telling you exactly where to walk.
There is no compass marker ticking down the meters to your objective. You are forced to observe architectural clues.
So if you need to find the flooded basement, you actually have to look for the physical signs of water damage on the floorboards or read the maintenance journals you find scattered around.
And the enemies you encounter in these labyrinths aren't just standard damage sponges that you can blindly shoot until they fall over.
No, there's deep tactical diversity. You will face armored, crustacean-like abominations that require absolute pinpoint precision to hit their unarmored joints.
And then you have these terrifying aquatic sirens that can literally phase through wet walls to flank you.
Which brings us to the survival data. Tekken Game actually compiled developer telemetry to create five golden rules for surviving the sinking city, too.
I love these.
Weaving these into a practical scenario really shows how demanding this game is. Imagine you are entering one of those abandoned sanatoriums.
Okay.
The very first thing the data suggests is that if you aren't playing in a darkened room with high-fidelity 3D spatial headphones, you are at a massive disadvantage.
Oh, totally. You need that optimal audio immersion simply to hear those sirens phasing through the masonry behind you before they strike.
Because if you don't hear them coming, your instinct will be to panic fire. And the telemetry is ruthless on this point. Players who panic fire at center mass waste up to 70% of their ammunition.
70%. That's devastating.
It is. You have to steady your nerves and aim specifically for the glowing bioluminescent weak points on these mutations.
Which ties perfectly into your inventory management. That's rule three, right?
Yep. If you didn't prioritize upgrading your backpack expansion early in the crafting tree, you won't have the grid space to carry the ammunition required for a protracted fight, forcing you into melee.
And rule four, you always, always need to keep at least one crafted Molotov cocktail and one sedative sanity serum in reserve for sudden ambushes.
Always. Because when the game traps you in a narrow, flooded corridor, your sanity plummets, your aim goes wild, and that single Molotov is the only thing that will buy you the 3 seconds you need to inject the serum and steady your hands.
It creates a brilliant loop of tension and release.
And all of this is underpinned by the final rule, Rule 5. You must read the lore documents.
They aren't just world-building flavor text. They hold the actual hidden safe combinations and the environmental clues revealing occult weapon caches.
If you don't read, you won't be equipped to fight.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? When a game strips away the HUD waypoints, refuses to highlight the path forward, forces you to cross-reference physical lore documents for safe codes, and demands you solve complex environmental puzzles without hints.
Yeah.
Does this game respect the player's intelligence more than the typical modern AAA release?
I mean, it absolutely does. By refusing to hold the player's hand, it forces a state of deep cognitive immersion and razor-sharp observation.
It treats you like an adult.
Exactly. If we look at the comparative benchmarks, Taking Game places The Sinking City 2 right alongside the undisputed titans of the survival horror genre.
We're talking about games like the Resident Evil 4 remake, which holds a 93 Metascore as a gold standard.
And Alan Wake 2, a narrative masterpiece with an 89 Metascore.
Frogwares has earned a seat at that table by committing entirely to their specific vision. They didn't sand down the edges of the horror to make it broadly accessible. They made it brutally authentic.
It is a testament to what happens when a studio achieves complete creative clarity. They identified the core of what makes Lovecraftian horror terrifying: vulnerability and the unknown. And they built every single mechanic around amplifying that specific terror.
From the heavy recoil of a revolver to the bounce lighting of a street lamp. That is a phenomenal takeaway. To distill this entire deep dive down, Frogwares did something incredibly brave and, frankly, very rare in this industry.
They took a real risk.
They actively listened to the criticism of their past work. They stripped out the open-world procedural filler that plagues so many modern games, and they doubled down on pure, uncompromising survival horror.
And they utilized Unreal Engine 5 not just to render high-resolution textures, but to weaponize lighting and physics.
Establishing a new atmospheric benchmark in cosmic horror. And that bold strategy earned them a very well-deserved 8.5 out of 10 from Tekken Game.
Well-deserved indeed.
Which leaves you to wonder about our relationship with entertainment today.
What do you mean?
Well, we live in an era where our daily lives are saturated with constant notifications, secondary screens, and increasingly fractured attention spans.
Oh, for sure. We're always distracted.
We're conditioned to always be multitasking. Isn't it fascinating that a piece of media demands our absolute undivided attention just to survive it?
It's almost countercultural.
It is. By completely removing the HUD, by forcing us to read every scrap of paper, to critically listen to the spatial audio around us, and to rely entirely on our own observation to keep our character sane, it asks for total commitment.
You can't just play this while watching a video on your phone.
No, you can't. Perhaps the real appeal of modern survival horror isn't just the adrenaline rush of fear. Maybe it is the incredibly rare, enforced luxury of total singular focus.
That's a really interesting way to look at it.
When you step into that submerged, flooded graveyard of Arkham, all the noise and distraction of the real world has to fade away entirely. Because if you aren't paying absolute attention to the shadows, well, you simply won't survive them.